Okay, welcome into another edition of the Duly Noted Podcast. Appreciate everybody for clicking on. And we got a great guest today. Shanna Snell is going to join us to talk a little bit about Florida's offensive line. Because obviously it is it's an area of concern. You say, what are you talking about? Everybody's back. Yeah, that's why it's an area of concern to me, because they didn't play well last year. And it's going to be – now, with Shannon, we'll ask him about what he sees in them last year, and also what he thinks they're going to be like this year with their new strength coach, Nick Savage. I was fortunate enough to go spend a little time with Nick the other day for an interview for our magazine. Now, we're doing a magazine piece on Dan Mullen and his plan, and also on Nick, a sidebar on Nick Savage, and that's going to be in the summer edition of Gainesville Magazine. And really impressed with the guy. Just a great guy, first of all. You know, I've dealt with strength coaches that weren't the best, but this is a great guy. And we talked a lot about the, you know, changing the culture at Florida. And not one time did he say anything negative about anything that had been done before. And if you've noticed, I think that's kind of a common theme for Florida with this staff and these is just, hey, whatever happened before. Don't worry about it. That's not, you can't do anything about anything that's happened before. The only thing that Dan Mullen did say to me when we did our interview the other day was that he was a little surprised. Like, the Gator fans want to be excited. He was a little surprised that they weren't more excited after winning the East two straight times under Jim McElwain. But I think we all know why. People weren't overly thrilled with the way either one of those seasons ended, obviously. Don't forget, in his first year, they lost three in a row, and it was FSU, Alabama, and Michigan. That didn't sit well. And then the next year, lose to FSU, get throttled by Alabama. And you won the East. And I've been – look, I'm the first guy. I have stood up there and said, look, if winning the East is so easy, why didn't Georgia do it? Why didn't Tennessee do it? Why didn't anybody else do it? And I get still, to this day, will give Jim McElwain a lot of credit for winning the East, especially the second year when he had to go on the road to do it for what was supposed to be a home game. He deserves a lot of credit for that. And I think Gator fans need to give him credit for it. But, you know, the bottom line is that, and then the four-win season – for the second time in 5 years. I think that's where Gator fans had a little bit of their mojo taken away from them. It's kind of hard to brag on your team when you have had 2 4-win seasons, and that kind of stuff isn't supposed to ever happen and never should happen here. I think in both cases, with both Will Muschamp and Jim McElwain, a lot of things went wrong with injuries. Certainly the knucklehead nine was a factor in the last one. The coach getting fired in both cases. Well, not in both cases. The first case, he actually survived it till the next year. But there were a lot of factors that went into why Florida only won 4 games. But it's still inexcusable. I don't care who got hurt. I don't care who got suspended. You should never only win 4 games at the University of Florida. Ever. Ever. Okay? That's my opinion. It may be in I'm trying to think. Isn't there a sport? I'm trying to think of a sport where you only play about 6 games. I think equestrian, you might, I don't know, but Florida doesn't have equestrian. All right. Meanwhile, around this community and around this city, people were popping their buttons all weekend because of all the stuff that went on. I don't know how much of you got to watch. I did see all the softball. I was covered 2 of the baseball games. I watched a little bit of the track as well. Was following lacrosse on my phone. Certainly an unbelievable weekend, but at the same time, we kind of been through these, haven't we? Think about it. I mean, I know it was a huge weekend and Gator fans were all happy. In fact, I ran to Jeremy Foley on Monday. Okay, I ran to Jeremy Foley on Monday, and he had mentioned that he called Greg Sankey, or they were talking, and he said, you know, yes, can you guys let somebody else win something? And Jeremy said, no way. He still bleeds that orange and blue, man. And for him, it was a big weekend. For Scott Strickland, big weekend. But how many times do you see around the country a team in a conference win the conference championship in baseball, win the softball tournament, win the SEC in men's and women's track. By the way, men's team advances to Sweet 16 in tennis. Lacrosse team advances to Sweet 16 in tennis. The only blemish was, of course, the loss to Florida State for the women. Women have struggled a little bit this year. And look, this is what I was talking to somebody about. And they really felt strongly if the one of their players didn't have to retire, they still would have won against FSU. But when you lose to FSU at home 4-3 on a weekend when everybody's doing great, it's certainly – and, in fact, Scott Carter at FloridaGators.com did a really nice piece on it. I recommend you go look at it. But, you know, we were talking about it and just how amazing it is, but we're so used to – them doing it. This is 2 in a row for baseball. It's 4 in a row for softball. You know, that's what Florida does. And it's a testament to Jeremy, and it's a testament, obviously, to Scott. Talk to Scott a little bit about, you know, what you have to do to make sure you're really good and you continue to be good. And he talked a lot about infrastructure, and infrastructure is a big deal. You have to give, and this has always been the Florida way. Well, not always, but it's since Jeremy became the AD and Scott's picked right up. In fact, I think Scott's taken it a step further with some of the stadium stuff. But give your teams and your coaches an opportunity to be the best they can be. That's all it's about. And I'm not saying nobody else does it. Oh, nice double negative. I'm not saying there's not a way of saying that without double negative. Okay, everybody tries to do that. Not everybody's successful at it. In fact, very few people are successful at getting all their programs going, and Florida, with the exception of women's basketball, has. But I think a little bit of it's geography. I think a little bit of it is the university, the brand that is the University of Florida, which is a big deal. We kind of forget about it because we just know that Gators are great, right? Gators are everywhere. All that stuff matters. You know, I remember Stacey Nelson telling me the story that the reason she came to Florida, she saw the Gatorade commercial with Keith Jackson. She says, man, that looks like a good school to go to. All right. She ended up being probably the best pitcher in Florida history. But all that stuff matters. I was out of baseball for 2 nights. Like I said, it was certainly a great win on Friday night, coming from behind and winning that game in the bottom of the ninth. And then obviously on handle them on Saturday. Wasn't shocked to see what happened Sunday. First of all, that team celebrated, and I'm not saying they went out partying, but they mentally were probably not really – the edge wasn't there. They've got to get that edge back this weekend at Mississippi State and then the SEC tournament and then going forward. You don't want to go in with struggling. But also – Georgia threw a soft toss and lefty, and I'm telling you, for as long as I've been alive, soft toss and lefties beat Florida. It's incredible. It's unbelievable to see how many times it happens. Every year, guy comes in throwing 85 fastballs, lefty. Florida always struggles with it. I don't know why. I can't explain it. But that was certainly huge to win the conference, and especially for this team. I think Sully and I talked a little bit afterwards about just how hard that was for this team, because they have been number one 11 of the 14 weeks. And that's never easy. And I can tell you, watching some teams celebrate when they've won against Florida, I mean, it's been like a regional. And they know that, but they're an older group and they've been through a lot of things, and really a lot of fun to cover this team. Will Dalton has become one of my favorite quotes of all time. He's probably the most interesting guy to talk to on the team. In fact, we kind of joke about we want to get angry Will Dalton when they pitch around him and then he gets the game-winning hit. That's the guy that's the best guy to interview, and he is. And then, of course, what softball did up there was amazing. Amanda Lorenz with her tremendous weekend. Alicia Ocasio. It's funny because I was talking to somebody about this, the Ocasio career, and just how odd it is. It's almost like a strange career where she's the best athlete probably to ever play here. I think she is. She just won her 20th game. She had a big, huge home run. Yet when people think of her career, it's, oh, remember the walk-off she gave up against Georgia and the walk-off here and the home run she gave up here. And, you know, her career has been a little bit starstruck, even though she's had an unbelievable career. I wish Alicia was the kind of person, and she's not. She's very low-key and very... I think she's the Michael Byrne of the pitching staff, and that her heart rate never goes up. Just to come out and say, you know, guys, I've had a pretty darn good career for the way you're beating me up on the message boards. But good for her, and good for Tim Walton. I've got a piece coming out. It'll be in Thursday's paper on Tim Walton and Kevin O'Sullivan, just how similar their programs are. Even though they're different sports, really, a lot different, more different than you would think, bats, balls, right, gloves, but they're really different sports, but their programs are very similar. And I think it's really interesting. They're both built on pitching and defense, and they both have a junior on the mound that's a dominant player. Although Kelly Barnhill, again, you watch her pitch, and there's just something that's not quite there. But when I talk to Tim Walton, he says it's really not that. Teams are just getting geared up for her more and more, and they're spending more time studying what she's doing. And that does make sense because, you know, on a weekend, like, for example, this weekend, Florida hosts a regional. I don't know who will pitch the first game against Bethune, but I'm guessing it'll be her, and then they'll come back with her on Sunday. So both Ohio State and USF are going to be studying a lot of video on her. So anyway, I don't know if that matters or not. Also, make sure we give the proper recognition to track. I watched a little bit of the track. Mouse Holloway does an amazing job, very quietly. He's got the back corner office over there at the Lemeron Center, where he literally comes up the back stairs so nobody sees him. I mean, he's quiet as a mouse, and he is amazing in what he's been able to accomplish. And I'm a big fan of Mouse Holloway, really big fan. He's done a tremendous job. And Mandy O'Leary, lacrosse, got over that little hump, down 5-0 in the round of 32 game. And you're like, oh God, here they go again. They're going to blow another. Nope. Came back, stormed to a victory, and they move on as well. And men's tennis. And let's not forget women's golf qualified for the finals of the NCAA. Men's golf is right doing that right now. Hopefully they can continue what they've done so far. I haven't checked the scores today, but I know they had an unbelievable round yesterday. So it was an amazing weekend. It was a fun weekend to be around here. And I do think sometimes we all take it a little bit for granted. I don't think anybody takes it for granted in football anymore. And I will say this. The one positive of 4-8 and 4-7 the last 5 years is that I don't think anybody will take it for granted. I don't think, you know, when Kentucky comes in here in game two, I don't think anybody's going to say, well, we'll always beat Kentucky. Yeah, but they're pretty good. And you better play well. And nobody's taking for granted, oh, we're going to Atlanta. Nobody takes for granted anymore that your team is going to be in a bowl game. So there is a positive there in that it's humbled, I believe, Florida fans a little bit. They can always use a little humbling, and that maybe there will be a little more patience. Because, as I've said a million times, guys, it's not going to happen overnight with this team. They're a little behind, and they've got to catch up. And I'm talking about Georgia. I'm not talking about Alabama. I'm talking about Georgia. They're behind Georgia. They've got to get it going. I think they're right there in the mix with South Carolina and, probably South Carolina. I think South Carolina is in Florida. One of those two is the second best team. You could argue I'm out of my mind because there's no way South Carolina is better than Florida, but they're about the same right now in terms of personnel. So, got to get better. But we'll see what happens. Again, I have a lot of confidence in Nick Savage to get that done. And I think he will, and I think Dan Mullen will. It just may take a little bit of time. Also, this weekend was the Players, and if you got to watch that, you probably were bored to tears. Webb Simpson getting it done. But I didn't even mention this in my column because I did mention Al Horford just to keep a Gator weekend going, having a big game for the Celtics. The caddy for Webb Simpson, Paul Tesori, played golf at Florida and is also a St. Augustine guy. So I know the family, and I've talked to Paul before and done stories on him. Happy for him. There's another Gator with a W. this weekend. So pretty darn good weekend. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Shannon Snell. First, I wanted to make sure I gave a plug to our Daily Football Fix. We continue this every day. You're getting something from me or Robbie about football. College football is usually Florida football related or SEC related. Robbie's been working a lot on more Florida stuff. I've been kind of doing some SEC stuff. I know that the one I have for Wednesday is pretty. I think it's a pretty good one. It's the five best quarterbacks Florida's going to face this year on their schedule. Hopefully you guys are enjoying them. I know they're getting a lot of clicks. I'm not into clickbait, but I do hope that people are enjoying that as well because it's a long, hot summer. And we all love baseball. And we all love softball. And we want to see Florida go far in a lot of things, but you got to have that football fix, right? And so we're giving it to you daily. Make sure you click on those every day as we keep them going. All right, we will take a break, come back with Shannon Snell, All-American linebacker at the University of Florida. You're listening to the Duly Noted Podcast at Gatorsports.com. Okay, welcome back to the Duly Noted Podcast. Now a real pleasure to be joined by former Florida All-American lineman Shannon Snell, and a great player here at Florida under Steve Spurrier and Ron Zook. And I wanted to talk to him about Florida's offensive line because he watches them, he sees them, he knows what they do. And first of all, Shannon, welcome into the Duly Noted Podcast. It's quite an honor, isn't it?
Yeah, thanks, Ty. I mean, it's always an honor talking to you.
Shannon, I mean, last year when you watched that team, because all during the offseason, Coach McElwain was talking about how good the offensive line was going to be, and then the first game was a bust. As the year went on, though, did you see them get better, or did you see a team that kind of underachieved in that spot?
I think they definitely underachieved. It was kind of strange to, you know, boost the team up, and, you know, obviously the strength was supposed to be the offensive line. And for everything that went bad last year, everything that all the reports that were coming out of camp and such, I mean, the offensive line was supposed to be at least some sort of a constant. And, you know, with a good offensive line, a lot of problems are hidden and a lot of problems are kind of, they dissipate over the course of a season. But, you know, just watching them, you know, after that Michigan game, it was kind of demoralizing because Michigan definitely dominated them up front. And you saw it in the play. You saw it, and everybody saw it in the probably in the film room. And it just was. It didn't seem to get any better. I don't know if it got worse from the Michigan game. You had flashes here and there of you know, some big runs or their capabilities and potential. But at the end of the day, they underachieved, and I think every last one of them knew it.
You know, they've talked a lot about the depth, that they do have a little bit of depth here, especially with the new guys coming in. But how important is having depth? I mean, I can remember back in the 90s and through your time, there wasn't a lot of concern about getting guys in and rotating guys in. It seems like it's a bigger deal now.
Yeah, that's weird for me because I was always one of those guys that said, hey, you know, you got a sense of pride of every snap that you played, every snap throughout the game. But you know, as nowadays go, you know, there's specific packages for different kinds of linemen. There's, you know, they want to try to keep them as fresh as possible, especially going into the fourth quarter. I've always been under the assumption of, you know, the more an offensive lineman, the more snaps he gets, the more comfortable he gets inside the game, inside the game plan. But each his own. I mean, you know, there's some guys like that. You know, I noticed one of the, you know, probably one of the best lines I've seen, and that was last year's Notre Dame's mm-hmm. line. They were really good, and they played, you know, those guys didn't really come out. So I'm still a big fan of not coming out and getting adjusted to the game, because coming off as an offensive lineman and then trying to go back in, it's almost like you're starting from play one again, because you don't get a chance to get a feel for your opponent, the game, or whatever that may be. So, you know, once again, if it ends up working out, then, you know, that's great. Just my personal preference is to let the game flow and give the guys, when they need a break, okay, they need a break. But offensive linemen aren't in as long as a defensive lineman, and they're not exerting as much energy.
Yeah,
so it shouldn't be that much of a problem for them to just leave them in.
Yeah, I think one of the problems last year is this wasn't a team that was in great shape. We've heard all the horror stories about not getting it done in the weight room, not getting it done in conditioning, and Nick Savage has come in and changed all that. And it looks like a team that is going to be in excellent shape. How big a deal is that? I mean, we know in the fourth quarter you got to kind of suck it up and get that reserve, but I think it's even important on the 8th play of the opening series because you're probably already a little tired.
Yeah, I think why I said it a while ago that Nick Savage is probably the best hire that Dan Mullen had, and that's just that goes the same because as an offensive lineman, and this goes for any position where there's a lot of contact. I mean, you can take out the quarterbacks and maybe the wide receivers and defensive backs, but an offensive lineman needs to be built strong and tough to last four quarters. And you know that all goes back to the strength coach. I mean, what did they do in the offseason? What did they do in the times that they were downtime? I think there was a lot of guys, and you've seen this over the years, where a lot of Florida's offensive linemen would have injuries. I'm not talking about, you know, ACLs or anything like that. I'm talking about like nagging injuries, like a shoulder injury or something that, you know, a guy that's more durable and, you know, has gone through some of the pounding of the offseason wouldn't have. So I think it was such an important hire for Nick Savage to be there. And also on top of that, I think it's going to show a little bit better in Florida's play. As I've seen throughout spring, these guys have, it's maybe not a sense of mentality of them being tougher, but they're able to endure a lot more, especially on some of these longer drives and especially when they're going to be counted on to run the football, because that's what they're going to have to do to be able to take some of the pressure off of whoever they put behind center.
You know, to me, Shannon, one of the big keys is Martez Ivey. He's come back for his senior year. And really, to me, you know, for a five-star guy, has been erratic, I think is the best way to put it. There are times when I think he looks good. I don't know whether he's better suited at guard or tackle, but he's going to play tackle this year. What's your thoughts on Martez and how important he is to this offensive line?
Well, Pat, there's no doubt that I think he's the best lineman on the team. I just think he's gotten caught up in a whirlwind of, like, where does Florida use him? I mean, I think he's a tackle, but they had to move him to guard because a lot of Florida's packages weren't suited to run outside where a tackle would be more effective. He's a good in-line blocker. I think once they get to that point that they can leave him out of position, let him learn, and let him stay there, I think he'll really shine. There's no doubt in my mind. Now, first of all, I know him personally, and he's a very smart kid. He's not one of these kids that's just like a blockhead and just, you know, tell him to run one way, and he does that. He's very cerebral, and, you know, it's really that's a good base for him to have. But he's a big, tough guy. And even looking at his body, I saw him about a month ago, and his body is slimmed down, and he's gotten bigger, which is not bigger, fatter, but he's gotten bigger, more leaner. He's gotten that muscle tone on him, and it's probably going to allow him to become that five-star player that everybody expected him to come when he came out of high school, when he came out of Apopka, to really, you know, show his strengths. I think his development-wise, it was kind of tough for him as well because they stuck him in so many different positions. And, you know, guard and tackle are two totally different things, as I learned from when I played guard in college and tackle in the NFL. They're two totally different positions, and you have to have a different mindset for each position. So for him, if they can leave him out of position, let him show what he's about, I think the reward is going to be well paid off.
You know, in McCoy and Heggie, they got two guys who both had injuries at the end of last year and missed some time, and now they didn't do much in the spring, but they got to come back and play. How hard is that for guys to miss that much time, or does it actually rejuvenate your body?
I think TJ was, I think for him, and actually I think for both of them, because Brett Heggie was, he was on his way. I mean, he was playing really good football. I mean, if you want to talk X's and O's, he was playing probably the best football of all the offensive linemen. When an injury hurts you like that, it's the simple fact for both of them that it has to get outside their head, because like we just said, you know, there's contact on every single play, and I think it's more of a mental battle for them. Now, I've had a shoulder injury before, and I missed a game because of it. It was the fact of not that I was worried about injuring the shoulder again. It was the thought of that it might happen again or that you could get injured. That's a really damaging thing, especially for a position that there's a lot of contact, a lot of violent contact. You know, so for both of them, and especially Heggie has a chance to be really good. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, the Pounceys were the last great guard tandem I've seen. And, you know, you have Jalapio, you had a lot of these guys. This guy has a chance to be one of those great guards that comes out of Florida if he can stay healthy. But it's all about a mental game for actually both of them right now. If they can't get past that, it's going to be hard to see them live up to a true billing or put together, you know, a solid campaign without thinking, hey, man, I could get hurt again. So that's actually really important on the training staff and also the position coach.
A long time ago, offensive line coach named Jimmy Ray Stevens told me that the hardest position to play as a true freshman is the offensive line, and we've seen some good ones come in. And so, hey, let's face it, Jason Odom's told me it was brutal for him his freshman year. But how hard is it for a freshman to walk right out of high school and into the SEC?
It's tough. I mean, it's not like you're – It's way beyond X's and O's, which, you know, if everybody thinks, okay, well, you got to learn the system and this and that and the other. That's a very small part of what you have to do. It's a lot of it's the, are you physically ready for contact? Are you physically ready? Because when you're, you know, you're playing in, you know, college, when you're playing in high school, I mean, you're playing 10 games. Your season may end. You may get to the playoffs and you may play more. But if you're playing in somewhere like the SEC where almost every single week you're going to be playing a guy that's like, you know, 280 to 340 pounds, you have to be ready for a physical pounding every single week against a guy that literally has a chance to go to the NFL. The SEC is known for defensive line talent and speed. So if these guys are, I mean, a lot of these guys that come out of school think, okay, well, physically the game changes. It is a real deal. And not to mention, you have to balance life outside. You have to balance your school. You have to balance like your social life. You have to balance everything when nobody's there. For the offensive lineman, I mean, just the mental grind of every day that you realize it's going to be your bones are going to hurt. You're going to have bruises that you've never seen appear on your body. It's a mental grind. I mean, it was one of the toughest things I had to do in football. All throughout my career in football was my toughest year was my freshman year because, you know, I had to go up against guys like Alex Brown and Gerard Warren in practice. And then, you know, when I got into a game, I was seeing guys I saw, superstars that I saw on TV. So, I mean, not only that, it's just being able to mentally grind down the fact that, you know, you're actually playing college football, then to get through the physical part. And if you're actually ready to get through the physical part without having any injuries or making sure you make it through the season okay.
You ever take people over there to show them your paver there in front of the Heavener Center with your All-American status on it?
It's so funny that, you know, my wife and my kids love taking pictures in front of it. They're taking like 7 or 8 pictures, and they're like, "Just get on those." I was like, "No, I don't want to. It's nice to have it there. It's nice to be recognized." But you know, I've always lived the life of an offensive lineman, Pat. I don't really care about recognition and all that good stuff. But it is what it is. But I'm happy to see it. I really am.
He is Shannon Snell. And by the way, I want to say this publicly, a big supporter of the Bob Dooley Invitational. We really appreciate all your help over the years and look for continued support. Thanks so much. We will be right back with the rest of the Dooley Noted podcast here at Gatorsports.com. Okay, thanks to Shannon for being on, and did want to say a couple quick words about the Bob. I know you guys maybe get tired of it, but it means a lot to me, not only to my family, but to the Stop Children's Cancer. The generosity of this community just continues to go through the roof. It's unbelievable. We had a great meeting with Outback Steakhouse the other day. They're going to have a big factor in it, and thanks to Brian Gibson out there, had a meeting with Zach over at Gainesville Highfield MRI. They're going to be out there. I mean, we're going to have so many people out there. And again, I want to encourage anybody who wants to come out to the golf tournament June 9th and get involved in the silent auction. We don't restrict you to having to be in the tournament to get involved in the silent auction. We want to raise as much money as possible. We have some amazing things out there. Couple examples. We have a Masters flag signed by Patrick Reed. That there's a lot of layers to get that done, but I got it done. So we've got that. That's going to be framed, and it'll look great. It hasn't been done yet, but it'll look great. I think we have a Dak Prescott signed jersey coming. We have the shot of Chris Chioza against Wisconsin last year. We got Mike White to sign it because we couldn't get Chris because he's a student athlete, right? We got him this year, and he signed that and another picture of himself, and we got those for him. There's all kinds of stuff like that. There are a lot of helmets. Charlie Strong came yesterday, the USF helmet. We got Nick Saban. We got Muschamp. We got Dan Mullen, of course. Who else do we have? Mike Leach, Larry Fedora, people I have connections with. So come on out if you want. I did want to say something quick about the gambling Supreme Court decision. And we'll see, because, again, Congress is trying to put through something to still stop it. My fear, like a lot of people are saying, what's going to happen when a booster goes to a player and says, you know, you cost me $10,000 because you dropped that pass. Well, how do we know that's already not happening? Do you think anybody who has a lot of money and wants to gamble isn't gambling already on college football? Do you think they're not going to either going to Vegas or have a bookie? No, the one concern I have is that you're going to get more unruly crowds. Crowds are going to be more unruly because it's almost like gambling, I think, is going to become like what the legalized gambling we already have, which is the lottery. And the lottery, people don't get mad because they're usually putting a buck in, you know, or they're buying scratch offs and stuff like that. But they start putting $75 down, and they don't quite have the utility bill paid. And then a guy drops a pass, they may get a little bit angrier. That's a little bit of a concern. Maybe I'm making too much of that too. I just know that the lottery is basically centered towards people who don't have a lot of money. It's not there. Ain't there is not. I almost said ain't. There is not any millionaire who's out there playing the lottery, okay? It's the people that are of low income that play the lottery. And if you make it so easy that all they have to have is an app on their phone to bet $40 on a game, you're going to see a lot of that. That's my concern. But it's, look, I think the number one thing is to figure it out the right way and do it the right way. And you're going to get a lot more of people talking about, is there a way to take some of this money that's being generated from gambling and get it to the players? And that's going to rev that up even more. And I think that's why administrators are kind of like, we don't want gambling for a lot of reasons. But look, the reason of, well, now guys are going to try to influence games. They've done it before. They've tried to influence games before. There's been gambling scandals before. If it's legal, it's less likely to happen, right? I would think, but who knows? It's a big Pandora's box. And I listen to Pandora, but I don't open the box very often. And I'm curious how this is going to be taken and how it's going to go. It'll be fascinating, and it'll be an interesting study as well. All right, let's get to the three things before we get out of here. Number one, I mentioned the players. I went over there on Tuesday and to talk to Billy Horschel for a video I did. And Billy went to work after he played nine holes. He went to work on his game in the back tees. And I stood there for 2 hours and watched that guy. And I learned so much about how to practice. And he worked so hard. He must have hit 100 whatever iron he was hitting. He was kind of far away. And just to try to get it right. And the funny thing is, they're all like that. This is why they're great. It's Billy Horschel. I will tell you, the Billy Horschel that walked into campus here versus that guy's got to be 30 pounds heavier, pure muscle. He's so big and strong now, but he works so hard at it, but he's like everybody else. You better be working that hard. The funny thing was, though, I'm watching him, and I'm like, I'm learning a lot from it, but I want him to get done. Because I want to do this video with him, and I want to talk to him about the golf tournament, because he's going to donate a bag, and that should be coming soon, hopefully. Well, I'm telling you, the golf balls he had out there, and you know, these are all perfect Titleist or whatever balls, they were multiplying. They were actually procreating on the practice range. Because you'd look up, and there'd be 100 balls, and then there'd be 120. And then you get down to like about 20 and you go, there are more balls now. There's 30 at least out there. He got down to the last five. I swear he hit 15 shots with those five balls. The only ball that I was glad that he hit was there was a raccoon running by. And he took a shot at that. Just kind of a little dribble. He wasn't trying to hurt it. It was funny. But the hard work he put in, while I admire Billy so much, and he's a friend, and I so happy when he does well. You see that hard work and you realize they're all this way. And that's how you get good. You don't get good in golf by stretching a little bit and going out to the first tee and hitting. Now, that's the way we all want to play because we don't want to work that hard. And that's fine. But that's why they're so good. And even then, I still can't get over the 17th hole. I cannot understand that. If you took 144 pros out there and you put a ball 126 yards away and said, hit it in the middle of the green, took the flag stick out, I bet you 140 would hit it. Maybe all of them. But they're all trying to be so precise. And you saw, well, there was like 60 balls hitting the water the first 2 days. I still don't get it. I played the course 15 times. Never hit in the water once there. You know why? I wasn't trying to hit it by the pin. I wasn't trying to spin anything. I was just trying to hit it on the green. If I three putted, so what? It's a four. It's not a five. It's not a six. It's not an eight. All right, second of all, certainly NBA playoffs have got my attention. I've been watching a lot of them. I have become a Celtics fan because of Al Horford. Enjoyed watching. I'm a Warriors fan as well. I don't know if they play each other. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to watch. But because I just like Steph Curry a lot. And that's the biggest reason. I love Steve Kerr. I think I've told the story before. Steve Kerr, when Florida was in Omaha, Steve Kerr and I and Tom Brennan sat at the bar talking basketball for like 2 hours one night. Just the nicest guy in the world. And I love his quotes. But don't bury the Cavs yet. They play tonight. No, they don't. They play tomorrow night, I think it is. Yeah. You know, they look like crap in the first game. But we'll see what happens there. But it will be it is funny how every time they lose a game, everybody on the radio, everybody on all the 85 ESPN talk shows, here's what's wrong with them and blah, blah, blah. When it's over, if they lose the series, let's talk. Till they lose the series, there's no point in it, but you're still going to do. And number three, the SEC All Sports thing, which Florida's won 12 years in a row, I believe, 11. I have to look it up. Will be coming out. If you're looking for it, it'll be in Monday's paper of this week. We will release it Sunday at some point. We have to wait for baseball to get over, which gets over Saturday. So that will come out on Monday if you're looking for it, or maybe on Gatorsports.com on Sunday evening. Not surprisingly, I think you'll enjoy the news. It's pretty, as we all know. I mean, Florida was leading going into the weekend, and then they won the baseball and track and track. So, yeah, you can assume Florida has won another all sports award, and I think it's significant. I think it's, I don't care how many times they win it in a row, it's significant that you have the best athletic department, athletic program in the SEC, which is most people consider to be the toughest conference to win in football. Now it's getting to be that way in basketball, women's basketball. Tennis is obviously very good. Clearly baseball and softball is the best. 13 teams got in from the SEC in softball. And you have the best one. And I think it gets a little bit, I don't want to say overshadowed, but kind of blown off because win it every year. Don't ever take that one for granted, okay? Don't take it for granted. That's all I'm saying. Thanks so much for listening in. We appreciate you guys for clicking on. We'll be back with another podcast next week. Thanks again to Shana Snell for coming on. And thanks to everybody who's contributed to the Bob Dooley Invitational. It has been amazing this year. I keep thinking people are going to say, nah, you know, not this year. They never do. They always say yes. We'll be back with another podcast next week. Until then, I'm Pat Dooley, sports columnist of the Gainesville Sun. I am deep, I am way back, and I am out of here.